8-class series on the Brahma Viharas. Brahma Viharas means the abode of the gods or the dwelling place of the gods. But I think that's too sublime. I want the dwelling place of the human being in the ordinary, in the practical, in the real. And so I don't know what to call it. Instead of Brahma Vihara, let us call it by our address. 22nd Street North. Because this is not a meditation towards idealism. In fact, I feel that a great deal of harm can be done when we listen to some of the tales of the Buddha in the Jataka tales, which are the tales of his, quote, previous lifetimes, in which he was often an animal and other things, mythologically. Because they often have an idealistic outcome, where he throws himself off the cliff to be devoured by a lion because the lion is hungry. He gives himself... Think about that the next time a beggar passes you by. But the point of it is not to think that some ideal state or some ideal condition or quality of mind is what we are trying to obtain, what we are doing in this practice. Those may be inspiring, but not so that we think that that's the correct course of action if we were awake. So the hesitation I have in doing the Brahma Viharas is that we idealize them. And they shouldn't be. These are practical practices that we will talk about and also do during the course of the sitting together before we start, which I encourage you to use regularly now in this week, throughout this next couple of weeks. We'll do metta and then we'll do compassion and then we'll do some of the others. And just start incorporating it in your life. And the homework for you was very much the sense of abiding in that practice of metta as you walk down the street, as you go through the activities of your day. So please take it serious, because it has a tremendous effect on many, many people. In fact, some teachers have told me that they want to start most meditators off with metta, because most of us come in with rather a preset way of looking at ourselves that is not often heart-based, often very a sense of self-cruelty. And we can use the very techniques and practices of the mindfulness to further that cruelty, to encourage more self-denial. And unless that's offset very quickly, you can develop patterns, deeply entrenched patterns, which will follow you for some period of time, sometimes years, into your practice. And to offset the tendencies towards self-deprecation and deprivation and self-belittlement, denial. Metta is a very nice force of mind to rebalance ourselves. Because as soon as you offer yourself a phrase like, may I be safe and free of danger, or may I be peaceful, oftentimes that phrase arouses objection. The sense of deserving. And I can often look out and see people wiggling from those phrases, you know, where they just aren't. And many people come up to you afterwards and say, "I just can't connect with the metta." It's because the mind is so entrenched in its ideas of self-dislike that it won't allow the intentionality of another way of seeing yourself to even come in. So you have to be very persevering in this practice, very determined, not with another sense of harshness, but like water on a rock, You know, it's just gonna wear it away. Just with patience, it's just gonna wear it away. So please do come into this practice. And again, it's even though it's an 8-week class, you're welcome to, if you find a resonance there with metta, to use it for as long as it's useful. Now, we have to make a distinction between metta practice and metta. Many people think that when you talk about metta, it's may I be this, may I be that, may I be the other thing. But metta is not that. Metta, if you might remember the series on the paramis, is a parami. It's a quality or a characteristic of awakened, of the awakened heart. And the practice is to align us with that intentionality. It's no more closer to metta than sitting meditation is necessarily closer to insight. You see, so don't confuse the two. I mean, so because when I speak of metta tonight, I mean the abiding quality of unconditional love. And when I speak of metta practice, that's what most of us understand metta to be. I think it's very important to understand from the very beginning that insight and metta practice find their resonance with each other in caring attention. Caring attention. Mostly what we do when we sit is that we pay attention. And mostly we argue with ourselves, don't we? We're in disagreement with something, or something is seen as unsatisfactory, or just repulsive, or annoying, or whatever. And we intone our intentional focus to pay attention and just to watch it. But oftentimes behind the scene is this squabbling mind, is this mind that just isn't sitting very nicely with what it is that's going on. And the way we can bring forth a heart that's truly open, truly accepting, and truly allowing is through this willingness to offer ourselves again and again this metta practice, to come closer and closer to that sense of metta where everything that is seen with appreciation and caring. So we genuinely care about ourselves. I mean, just imagine what that would mean in most of our lives if we genuinely cared about ourselves. We cared when we were hurt. We cared when we were having a problem and a difficulty, or we were tied in a knot of tension. We cared about that. The difference, when you care about something and not, when you care about something, you turn towards it. Your heart opens to it. It wants to do something about the pain. It wants to offset the pain with a sensitive, caring attention so that it knows how to handle the pain, so that the pain doesn't become worse, so that the pain is on the road to cure towards a solution. And so it's not a begrudging pain. It's not like, oh, I've got this problem over here and I'll begrudgingly look at it. It's a caring attention. It invites a wholehearted response to something, the sensitive response to something, you see? So we're trying to infuse our practice with that sense of caring attention. I think it's so important. I can't underestimate its value to you. So if there isn't, or if there's insufficient caring in your practice, or if there isn't enough, or you don't feel, if your practice feels dry and mechanical, it's probably because it needs an infusion of that sense of heartfelt sensitivity. And may I say that the mechanics of the practice will only take us so far. Yes, you will see some improvement. Yes, you'll see some change in yourself. Yes, you'll see yourself better able to sustain your attention. all of that muscle is being built when you pay attention to sustain your attention. But what you miss is the art of the practice, is the aliveness of the practice, is the fluidity of the practice, is the richness and tone, intimacy of the practice. And that's where the heart feels most engaged. That's where you no longer feel dry and sort of mechanical in your approach. In Buddhism, we talk about clear comprehension. We talk about mindfulness, and mindfulness is, when the Buddha spoke about it, he always spoke about it in terms of mindfulness / clear comprehension. The mindfulness was the exactitude of being present with, of seeing just what is there. The clear comprehension took in the nuances of the situation, the set of circumstances from which the situation was coming out of. And when you take that into account, then that's your heart that meets the field of attention with a true understanding of what is taking place, you see? For instance, a mindfulness response to somebody who is asking what you think about their new clothes may be very exact and true, but also very poignant and hurtful. Sati / clear comprehension response to somebody who has a new set of clothes, and you know that it's their only set of clothes, or that they have just bought it and they like it very much, may be a modified truth, so that you take into your heart their response to what you're saying. And I'm just making this up. I mean, in every situation, clear comprehension comes in. So you can see the abiding heart. You can see that this is not a mechanical practice. It's not just saying you're this way and you're that and let's get on with it now. These are human lives we're dealing with, human minds we're dealing with. These are interactions. These are people coming in touch with one another. And if we don't bring sensitivity to that, if we don't bring a heart response to that, what are we? What good is this? I will have nothing to do with it. Period. And so, this question of metta infuses our insight practice. It's really the foundation on which we do things. So we see something and we go, okay, let me just abide here with it. Yes, it's a hard one. You know, yes, I don't like my loneliness, my depression, my sadness, my bereavement, my grief. But let me just, you know, maybe our house is crazy with people doing 10,000 things, and it's not the way we want it in that moment. But let me just before I yell out in horror, let me just take it in. You can see what feeds metta when we talk about this is understanding. Understanding is metta. When you understand something, when you take it in, which means you have to take all the circumstances of the situation in, not just your narrow, pointed focus. When we take in, okay, so let's see what's going on here. Oh, I see. Okay, so now let me respond to it from that. The whole seeing of it. Everything in Dharma moves towards the whole. Moves towards, because the whole is what can bring the heart out. And so the metta is the foundation from which all these other Brahma Viharas arise. When the whole seeing, when the whole heart sees pain, the characteristic that comes out is karuna or compassion. That's the response of the heart, the whole heart, in relationship to pain. It's a characteristic of metta. Karuna, compassion, is a characteristic. When metta meets pain, it becomes compassion. You see? When metta sees somebody succeeding, it feels joy, mudita. And when metta is in a challenging situation, it's non-reactive, upeka, equanimity. See, you remember when we were talking about the paramis, that all of the paramis were really mirrors of each other, holographs of each other. And so too, the Brahma Viharas are all holographs of metta. And that nurturing heart is so important, a component part of our practice. This is a very important series from my point of view. We take it often as, okay, I'm going to do metta practice. And and it gives us something to do. We feel like we're very actively involved in exchanging good feelings, and we feel the warmth of it, and we get caught up in that sense of warm-heartedness, and we love it, and we can see, wow, I've never felt this way about myself, and we actually have moments or gaps of spaces where we actually like ourselves, perhaps, or at least we're not ridiculing ourselves. And then we get hooked. But let us remember that this practice, wisdom, is based in insight, not getting hooked. Getting hooked, we get hooked everywhere. We're trying to unhook in this practice, not hook ourselves somewhere else. So use practice with the practice of metta skillfully. Skillfully. Don't let it substitute for insight. There are 10,000 hooks out there wherever you go. So be careful. So we're in the realm of the unconditional love, where you just have basic warmth for somebody, not because they've done something for you or to you. Our conditional love, which is what happens when metta percolates through the mind, thought grabs it and makes, because metta is always there. It's not like you, it's just when you don't like yourself. And we have a lot of resistances and aversions to people and things, including ourselves. There's a wall. And every once in a while there's a crack in the wall, and metta comes through, and we actually feel love. But then the mind grabs it, doesn't let it go very far before it gets all caught up in thinking, and we make it into passion. And passion, of course, is contractual love. You know, as long as you love me, then I'm fine. But if you turn away from me, then there's be jealousy and envy and all kinds of other problems. Because it's conditional. It's contractual. It's a contractual. You have to be this way in order for me to express my love. Or it's sentimental. Sentimentality. That's the other one. You can tell that's not my... I have such a keen sense of sentimentality. As soon as it goes over, that's it. I want to walk away. Because it's milking it, you know, and it's based on pleasure and being nice and just sentiment. Oh, it's just awful. somebody, I love the part of the poem that says, you know, it's teaching a thing its loveliness is metta. That at some long ago time, we were all self-allowing. Yeah, and we lost it. So much of Dharma is really just gaining a foothold back into that. Reteaching. A teacher once said to me, she said, Rani, I've been working with you for years and you've never seen your own beauty. He was right. You know, I said, what? Oh, this is about me. This is about a relationship here. This is about holding how I hold myself. It's really, you know, we walk prematurely away from ourselves, thinking that the meditation will somehow transform me into something else besides what I am, hoping, keeping our fingers crossed that it will do just that, because there's such self-angst that we see nothing that can be of any value, or certainly not anything sacred or holy within this, that there has to be a transformation away from me in order for me to be able to hold the practice and to be awakened. So many of us, subliminally, if not consciously, are walking the practice away from the very abiding being that we are. Because we've never learned how to see who we are with any kind of impersonal quality. We take it all so personally. We take it all as a fact. It's all of everything is about us. And we're so tightly wound around that sense of me, which is really arrogance. The whole world, you know, everything in here is all... You take a cotton and you push it again. There's nothing. You can't see anything through it. But you take that same ball of cotton and you begin to stretch it out, and light gets through. And so what we're doing really, in the course of our practice together, is taking all qualities of our mind and heart that we see, and at first, it's full of distraught messages about what I've been and who I've been and my history and my worry and my difficulties and all of the contentious way we look at ourselves. And then something happens over time, and it happens on its own just through the repetition of seeing it and being willing to hold our emotions rather than to flee from our emotions. There grows ever so gently space. At first it's like everything's in your face, you know, it's like the movie Aliens. And then, as the charge of it, as the fear of it, as its personal meaning becomes relaxed. So listen to the words, because those are the words that I offer in terms of your own practice. Relax. Ease of well-being. Once we see that this manifestation, inward manifestation of our lives, of our histories, of our memories, is a very impersonal process. I mean, the sense of I comes from the angst and anxiety we have with it, and once that abates a little, then we just have that which is happening without any sense of I near mine. And then there's a little bit of space that comes. It floats rather than springs out. It arises rather than jumps out. And you can feel when something isn't jumping out anymore, there's more understanding about it. We have less identification with it. I'm saying the same things. And you know what? We may even start to care about it. And that's huge. When your anger is not a representation of everything evil that's ever been, but you actually, wow, look at this thing. What's going on here in me? You actually are concerned about the difficulty and the angst and the tightness and the tension of having anger. Okay, so let me just see this. Let me... ease of well-being. Ease of well-being. Ease of well-being. Nothing happens until we start having that self-metta. How can we? When we're driven by the tension and self-dislike, that's so strong, it's such a strong force and core of who I believe myself to be, that when it arises in consciousness, I try to get away from it as far and as fast as I can. Usually what that means is that I start getting involved or enmeshed in someone else's problems to serve them without thinking from what, or what is the motivation from what I serve. But really, with the motivation for most of our service, but not all, there are some, for much of our service, is trying to get some sense externally that we're okay. And even if we serve whatever ways we serve, and then we hear a thank you, it only gives us temporary relief because the belief system is still there. We don't believe the thank you. We think that if the person really knew us, they wouldn't say thank you. They would see what we really were. There used to be an old Moody Blues song in the 60s that said, "If only you knew what was inside of me now, you wouldn't want to know me somehow." We feel that, don't we? Now, we have to be honest. If that's driving our practice, then our practice needs something here, needs some relief. We need some relief for that we need something there. And maybe metta is the very thing that we can bring forth to bring some space to that. To bring up, so it's okay, let me at least feel this thing. Let me not jump into action, you know, in revulsion of what's going on inside of me. Let me at least feel this. Okay, oh, that sense of not liking, okay. That's the beginning. The willingness to honor what is true, to feel what is happening, without immediate flight, then that's a very significant step. Doesn't mean that it's going to go away overnight, or you're not going to have years of this intoning of that self-dislike, because it's so pervasive. But once we are willing to face the challenge of it, rather than to act out of it, act out, then it's tremendous influence and power that it has to heal, the awareness to heal itself. And with that awareness, we bring a caring, I care about this. I care what I'm doing to myself. I care about what I'm doing to myself. When we care about what we're doing to ourselves, already there's an impersonal space there. You feel it? You see that? There's already some relief We're taking ourselves into our heart. That is the practice of metta. That is what we are trying to do. You know, when we say, may all beings, well, what we mean really is all of our different disguises in ourself, all of the different character manifestations of, because it's all in there in you. When we open up to all beings, because all of the qualities and characteristics of all beings is in us, the whole continuum of all of that is inside of ourselves. We have some degree of impatience, annoyance, frustration, you name it, it's in there. Wait long enough, it'll show itself. So for us to love all beings is really to love all the different disguises and faces and forms within ourselves. All the different qualities of mind, all the different personalities. That's why we find it so easy to love the generic population, but so difficult to love the person. All beings, but not that damn neighbor of mine. Because a neighbor of mine resonates, whatever is happening there, that I just resonates with that quality and characteristic in myself, that thing that I don't like in myself. We're always revolting against our own tendency. Don't take my word for that. Find it in you when you don't like someone. Reclaim the symptom, because it's always about us. Reclaim the symptom. And then you reclaim that part of your mind, that part of your mind that we've cut ourselves off from, that we no longer have an open heart for. So the space that we have around things, the mind's tendency is to grab a hold of the forms and expressions that are around us, to seize upon them, to single them out, and to grasp them. And as the practice deepens in us, there's less tendency to go out and cling. Less tendency. The forms and expressions and experiences of the world do not have the same hold on us that they used to. And over time, you'll be able to see that. Perhaps you may be too young in the practice yet, but over time, you'll be able to see that. That also has its corresponding internal experience. And over time, I just don't care what the expression of me is in any. I mean, it's like, it's a puppet show. I don't ask myself to be angry or upset. This is just, it's a movie that's going on in here. Okay, so, and then with that sense of release and relaxation and deepening abiding space, the Buddha said, someone who knows love is very close to the truth. As we release ourselves more and more from the identification, the nearer and nearer the resonance of stillness the more I'm lost in the angst and reactivity within internal or external world objects, the more distant that stillness is and the louder and boisterous my own mind is. And I'm consumed with noise and with speed and with getting and accomplishment, because that's what material things imply. That's what they lead to.
That's where they, if you invest in them, this is the outcome. Our minds have been formed around that material wanting. And when a mind is formed around the material wanting, you get the U.S. How far extreme do we have to go? And then you have to protect it and fight against anyone else. You see, the whole thing is just based upon the mechanics of grasping. Now there's another way to live, which is what we're trying to explore. There's another way to be. But we're doing it in the heart. We have very few comrades in this business. And we're trying to bring a heart out. We're trying to bring our heart out. And people will take advantage and manipulate, and they're just because they're not so interested in that. And so, you know, it's not an easy trip. It's much nicer to go off in the corner of some jungle or forest and practice all by yourself. And that will bring that'll bring clarity and awakening as long as you stay in that forest. You come back out here, it all comes back out. The seeds are still there. We have to deal. That's why I like this. We're right here in the middle of it all. And we form as a small community. It's okay. We're all in this together. Let's see if we can make it work. Let's see if we can resonate with the basic warmth of heart. Let's see if we can bring forth the antithesis of our encultured ideals. The Buddha said, "It is this way we will train ourselves, by liberation of the self through love." We will liberate ourselves. We will liberate ourselves through love. He goes on to say, we will develop love, we will practice love, we will make it both a ways and a basis, take our stand upon it, store it up, and thoroughly set it going. See, that's the movement of metta with insight. We liberate ourselves not through antagonism and combat, but through love. Not through wrenching assertiveness, but through ease of well-being, through relaxation, through seeing and understanding, through inviting our heart out from the beginning. From the beginning. And it hurts. It hurts to do this. It hurts to love. It's much safer to stay within the blockade chambers of your heart. Much nicer. All you then have to worry about is the pain of holding that chamber steady. Because if you come out, you're going to feel the pain of the world. That's the side. That's where it's going to be. We step out. You can't just step out to your own pain. You step out to all the pain. You step out to the caring about all things. Nisargadatta Maharaja, a teacher of mine, went to see him in 1980. He said, "Wisdom tells me I am nothing. Love tells me I am everything. Between the two, my life flows." It's from seeing the impersonal that our heart comes out. It seems paradoxical. But that's the way it occurs. It's from seeing the impersonal. No longer being held within the cocoon of I, me, and mine, that the heart can flourish. And when it comes out, it cares about everything. I mean, I read about some of the policies that are being done, are being made, Clean Air Acts, and you just feel this wrenching. What are we doing? You know, this wrenching pain. It's wrenching pain. And then you go, okay, this is it. This is what it means to care. On TV or in a movie, you see a documentary of, and you just barely keep your eyes open. It hurts so much. Okay, this is what it means to care. You're at the bedside of the dying, and there are two children who are going to lose their mother, and you're there, and you just, and that's what it means to care. That's what it means to care. It means hurting. It means we're going to hurt. But along with the capacity to hold, to hurt, to feel that hurt, is the capacity to hold that hurt. The capacity to say, okay, I can feel this. Okay, I can feel this. It's okay. I don't have to run away from this. And then you move through that to a level of stillness that is no longer caught in the dynamics of the particular. And there's a resonance far, it's like an old voice, something that just goes through the annals of human history. You can just, and it's that foundation of stillness, which is metta, which is the awakened heart. It's okay. In this too. And so even though there's an active, ongoing activity and expression to work with the pain that one sees, there's a deep, abiding rest within that stillness that says okay even to the pain and even to the challenge and even to the problem. And then there's action from love. And so we practice metta for that transformation, for that intimation of both the stillness in the activity, the allowance, and the action which tries to correct, just tries to serve, not from self-lacking, not from insufficiency, not from inward poverty, but because there is where action springs forth. And this is metta. And may all beings practice insight in metta. Can we sit for a minute or two?